No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the discussion by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIO and the number one. Maria and I took last week off because it was the Academy Awards. And nobody wanted to miss that, huh, Maria?
That's right, especially here in La La Land.
Well, it really is La La Land, isn't it? I couldn't make it. I couldn't make it to the bitter end. I fell asleep.
Oh, really? You're 3 hours later.
I got up the next morning, and I couldn't believe it. That was the news story that I had to watch three times. I just couldn't believe
it was unbelievable. I kept wondering why this person with the headset was wandering on the stage and what were they doing there. And it turned out it was to rectify the wrong. But my goodness, talk about embarrassing. And I guess those two, they haven't been fired, but they said they will never be involved with the Academy Awards again.
I think the thing that really stunned me the most was there was one guy that took a camera shot of the audience, and the people just looked stunned, like they had just seen a horrific
train wreck.
Shirley MacLaine and I forget who the other actress was, but they had just had the most horrible looks on their face, like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And yeah,
Well, first of all, it was human error when that happens. But what I think really is the problem is the man who gave the envelope was busy on Twitter, obviously trying to create compelling, riveting, up to the second kind of feed. And he got distracted. And thus there's the wrong, incorrect envelope.
Well, I got to tell you, at the Democratic convention 1 year, part of my job was to there was going to be a film on Hubert Humphrey, and Jimmy Carter, who was president at the time, introduced the film, and we were all up there following the script, and Jimmy Carter said, I want to introduce this, we're doing a film about this great American, blah, blah, blah. He went on and on about how wonderful Hubert Humphrey was, and then he said, that great senator from Minnesota and vice president, Horatio Hornblower. And we all went, Horatio Hornblower? And the guy next to me said, I don't even think he was an American. And I go,
oh boy.
No, I don't think he was. I think he's a character from, Gilbert
cartoon, and
Sullivan,
right?
Or something.
Yeah.
It was Gilbert and Sullivan or something. But you know, I can see where that can happen from time to time. But it was just amazing. Anyway, what a week. And for us here in D.C., it started with Eleanor Holmes Norton putting in a new bill to admit the state of Washington, D.C. into the union, H.R. 1291.
So what does that mean? What now?
It would make the district – it's the same bill that's introduced every time. It would make the district – a state, just like every other state. It was introduced with 116 co-sponsors, all Democrats, most co-sponsors that have ever introduced the legislation. So I guess that's a positive thing. They really don't think it's going to pass, but Senator Carper will introduce legislation in the Senate, companion legislation. Of course, the people of California, being as wonderful as they are, Maria, 13 members of Congress from California have already endorsed the bill.
Can you name them?
Not off the top of my head, but okay. We will next week. We'll name them. There's okay. 116 altogether, but
maybe we can post that to the PBS website.
Yeah, and maybe we could. Yes, I would like to do that. And maybe we can go state by state. But yeah, a lot of them, 13 of them in California. But you have a lot of members of Congress from California.
Yeah.
And basically what it does is, like the bills previously, it carves out what is the federal district, which is the capital, and then all the surrounding area where the people of the district live would become a state, and they would have the same rights that every other citizen has for the first time in American history. And they
so, Michael, you say carve out, what does that mean?
The thing called the National Capital Service Area. And the reason we do this is because the Constitution says that Congress shall have control over the jurisdiction in which it resides. Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution says to have exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over a district not to exceed 10 miles square, which may, by the secession of particular states and acceptance by Congress, become the capital of the United States.
So it would be like the Vatican City?
Well, in a sense, yes, it would. And the capital would, not the state.
Right.
But that's how we get around the constitutional ban. Then we don't have to even deal with the Constitution, because the Constitution says can't be any bigger than 10 miles square, but it can be as small as they want it to be. So Congress would still have control over itself, which was really the intent of the framers, that Congress should have control over the land that no state could impose on Congress because it occupied a land that was part of another state. So we take all that away and we say, yeah, Congress and the White House and the administration stays the same. They have control over the land they occupy, and everything around it becomes the state of, now Washington, D.C. For years, it was New Columbia. I got to tell you, the people that introduced the bill, this is all I live for, and I boycotted. I didn't go up there because they never invited us, believe it or not. They delivered the referendum, which 85% of Washingtonians
voted for in November, right?
Yeah, in November, right. And which we were a part of, and we had a constitutional convention. We rewrote the whole thing. No, they didn't, because they don't want to empower us. It's a local political thing. The people that run Washington, D.C. are not very nice people, I guess would be the best way to put it, because I worked very, very hard, and so did the other senator and representative. Now, the other senator, my colleagues, went up there and stood in the background while they presented all this to Congress at a news conference, but I refused to do that. I said, look, if I was elected by the people to do this, and if you don't respect that, I don't know what to say. So I boycotted it, actually. But the big news for us, still wanted to happen, of course. And we, when lobbying for the bill, some of my staffers went into a congressman's office and actually got to talk to Congressman Russell of Oklahoma. He said he would debate the issue. So we reached out to him and asked him if he would debate it with me on the show. And his staff said he's considering it and they're trying to work it out. So maybe in the next few weeks, we'll be able to have Congressman Russell of Oklahoma, he's a Republican, who doesn't believe in statehood for the district, on, and we could debate it. which would be great. It would be great to have somebody do that.
Well, our retired Congress member gave me an earful because he had an event on a Sunday last year. It was a fundraiser for one of our candidates. And so I broadcast our program from his home and then went right downstairs to the reception. And he was asking about you, and woo, did he give me a blast about why it's not okay.
Why does he think it's not okay? I'd really be interested in that.
He says that our county has more citizens than the District of Columbia. So why would you get to have that clout in the capital when we have the population that, and our county has less than a million folks in it, be able to have that kind of pull? And also, of course, because you lean left.
Yes. And we also have population that's greater than many counties in California. In fact, most counties in California probably have a smaller population than District of Columbia. But the truth of it is, we also have a bigger population than two states. We're bigger than Wyoming, and we're bigger than West Virginia. And more important to the founding fathers that founded this country are taxes. You know, no taxation without representation. We have a bigger tax burden than 22 of the states. So we're not based on, it's never been based on size. Our government is not based on size, because if it was, California would have 25 senators, mm-hmm. and Wyoming would have one. Mm-hmm. Everybody gets two senators, regardless of the size of the state. So, and statehood is the only thing that makes this equal. But that's one of the arguments put forth that, you know, would give us too much clout. And that's really the bottom line, is it's liberals. It's that we would have two liberal Democratic senators, which would be 2% of the Senate. And conservatives don't like that. And I'll be the first one to say, if Washington, D.C. was as Republican as it is Democrat, Democrats would be standing up there saying the same thing.
Yes.
Say, we don't need two more Republican senators. So it's really turned into a partisan fight, but that's okay. We're on the right side of it, and you know, and that's an old saying: when God is on your side, you have a majority. That's all you need. So
interesting that you said the right side of it, though.
Wow. And you know, while we're talking about issues of equality, Nevada announced this week that they're going to ratify the Equal Rights Amendment. Now, the Equal Rights Amendment, for those of you who may not remember this piece of legislation, was written in 1923 by Alice Paul and Crystal Eastman and introduced, but it didn't pass Congress till 1972. And 45 years later, it has still failed to get ratified. It three states short of ratification. One of the reasons that I bring this up is not only because it's a matter that's much like statehood for the District of Columbia, but also we did a show about it early on with two of the people that had reintroduced the Equal Rights Amendment. Had pushed to reintroduce it in the last Congress. So this is something that I feel a connection to for many reasons. But just so you know, it's the simplest of amendments. It's really simple. It reads that equality of rights under the law shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or any state on account of sex, and that Congress shall have the power to enforce that regulation, and that it will take effect 2 years after ratification. So it's pretty, pretty simple. It just says that it codifies women in the Constitution. And it was very controversial. I really don't understand what the controversy was about. But there's still many states that haven't ratified it: Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, Florida, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia, which surprises me, Oklahoma, Georgia, and Arkansas. Of course, California, you guys were probably the first people to, to ratify it, because you're nice people out there. And,
thank you.
You know, it's just amazing to me that we can't get this passed.
It's ridiculous. It's 38 states we need, I believe, right?
Right.
We're at, what, 35?
No, I think we need 34, and we're at 31. I think that's a guess. We need 2/3 of the state. So
I think it's 3/4 we need.
Oh, maybe 3/4. You may be right. Yeah. Which would be 38 states.
Right. Which is terrible that we're even having this conversation in 2017. It really is.
But I want to tell you that it was a great lesson for me in politics, because it was a woman, and she passed away recently, actually. Her name was Phyllis Schlafly.
Yes.
She was a housewife from either Ohio or Indiana. I can't remember.
I thought it was Colorado?
No. I think it was either Ohio or Indiana. But they laughed at her. The feminists laughed at her. She was a housewife. Mm-hmm. And they put up, all the liberals in Washington got together and stood up against her, and she kicked their rear ends when it came down to it. Schlafly kept it, led the movement against it, and sure enough, she defeated the legislation. And there's a lesson for liberals in this, by the way, you know, that we are too arrogant lots of times, and this is what undid us, I believe, in the last election as well. You know, one of the classic things that I remember from the ERA is that we did a commercial, the liberals did a commercial with all these famous people like Alan Alda and Gloria Steinem and, you know, that type of people saying, support ERA. And in the final analysis, when it was done, somebody said, well, all those, the people that Alan Alda and Susan Sarandon and these type of people appeal to already supported ERA. They didn't go after anybody that didn't support. You know what I mean? They didn't try to get new people. Phyllis Schlafly ran a commercial with a woman general who said, I've made it in a woman's world, and a man's world, and I'm against the ERA.
I don't know what's to be, but by the way, she was an attorney too. She wasn't, she was a constitutional lawyer, and she is from Missouri, but I don't know what's there to be against.
Well, first of all, she may have been many things, constitutional lawyer and many other things, but they laughed at her, and because she raised her children, they were like, oh, she's some nasty housewife from Missouri, you know, and they didn't take her seriously. Ring any bells lately? They didn't take her seriously. and she said things like, you know, women would be forced into combat and they would lose some of the rights that they have because they're treated as a separate class, and it's not always a bad thing, it's a good thing, and I forget, some of the claims they made were absolutely ridiculous.
Because she was against communism and abortion and the Equal Rights Amendment, which is interesting to huddle those causes together, if you will. But it's almost like equal pay for equal work. It's like, why would you have a problem with that? Forget gender. Just, you do the job, you should get paid X amount, whatever that is, whomever that is, and whatever gender they are.
Well, and you know, the thing that's one of the connections that it has to what I do is it's one of the reasons the DC constitutional amendment to give DC senators and congressmen, there was a constitutional amendment to change that provision that I talked about earlier in the Constitution, add an amendment that would give D.C. full representation. Wouldn't make it a state, but it would have given it two senators and a voting representative. And one of the reasons it was defeated was the Equal Rights Amendment. They tied it to the Equal Rights Amendment. And as a liberalization of America. And again, now we didn't get anywhere close. Now, the Equal Rights Amendment, if they needed 38 states, they got, you know, 35. D.C. only got 16 states to ratify our constitutional amendment. Again, God bless California. They were one of them. But they tied it, the two together, strangely enough, you know, and that's what they say, right, about politics, that it makes strange bedfellows. Well, that was one of them, that D.C., the D.C. statehood movement was directly connected to the Equal Rights Amendment, and it was one of the ways they used to defeat it. So, yeah, I don't know what the problem is. I think the problem right now is that it's been out there so long, you know, people have forgotten about it.
My understanding is that to the ability to ratify it ended in the 80s. So right. I don't know.
Well,
how do you bring it back?
You'd have to reintroduce it.
I see.
I believe that you'd have to reintroduce it. But the point of Nevada wanting to ratify it at this point, the article that appeared in the Post about it, which by the way was brought to my attention by our old friend Kathleen Gomez, the point that the article was making is they think it's a reinvigoration of women in America, that we saw this gigantic, you know, march right after the inauguration of right. women coming out and saying we're not gonna put up with you kicking us around, and that this is also a thing that's caused it to be reactivated, and maybe it's a sign of new involvement in politics by women, a new surge of female feminist activism.
But interestingly, and from Nevada, because that tends to be more Republican.
Yes, it does.
Even though Harry Reid notwithstanding. So and you'd think Florida would be more liberal, wouldn't you?
I don't know.
I know they've got Republicans in charge there, but still, with all the immigrants that they have there and the Cubans and Hispanics.
Well, though, too.
Oh,
they got a lot
I see.
Of old people, you know, and right. And it's a delicate balance. It's a delicate balance. You know, I think that my generation, our generation faces with women. You know, we were the first generation, I think, where equal rights for women was a relatively accepted thing, but we didn't know how to handle it. You know, just as a man growing up in the 60s and 70s, you know, there was that time where you didn't know, you know, was it sexist to hold the door open?
Right.
Was
right.
it, you know, my personal opinion is that you can acknowledge the differences in race and culture and sex without as long as you realize that they're not significant in the cosmic scheme of things when it comes to equality. You know, men and women are different, but the differences are not significant in terms of how much you pay them, how the government treats them, how, you know what I mean? And
yes.
I don't think you have to, it bothers me sometimes that we homogenize everything. I'm not against allowing you to have a crush on the front lawn of the Capitol building or in a school. I think you can also have a menorah and whatever, you know, symbolizes Kwanzaa and whatever. You know what I mean? I don't think you have to get rid of everything and not have anything and not recognize any of the cultural differences. I think you just need to see them all as equal. So,
well, in what's the adage? If you don't stand for something, you stand for nothing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
so right. Yeah, we get consumed by PC. And as far as door opening and all that, I do it to somebody who's behind me. I don't look at their gender or their age. It's just common courtesy to me. And it has nothing to do with less than, more than, power or equality or what have you. I think it's, I'm surprised, frankly, at how few people do that, because especially at my age and in school with all these young kids, and they just push on through. And I think, you know, forget the fact that I'm twice your age. Let's, you know, I'm just a person struggling with my briefcase and my books and everything else, just like you are. It, you know, too, Michael, I have to tell you, this is such a tangential statement, but I got my ashes on Wednesday. And when I went to class that night, most people didn't know what it was. Most. And well, from everything from, would you mind if I told you that you have a smudge on your forehead, to what is that about, to why is your forehead black? I've never had more questions. I did this after I saw my clients, by the way, because I thought that probably isn't something I need to bring into the therapy room, even though I know some news anchors and stuff wear it. But it's the one day of the year where I feel like I'm part of a tribe, you know? And I saw two other gals that had it on their forehead when we went on our break to the bathroom and stuff, and it just gave them the thumbs up. But it was like, I had never had that much honest ignorance before.
Well, I grew up in an Italian neighborhood, Maria. So if on Ash Wednesday you were walking around without ashes on your head, somebody would have said something to you.
But in this day and age, I guess it's getting really, really uncommon.
Yeah, I guess so. And last time I checked, although I don't know that this is still true, but last time I checked 10 or 15 years ago, Catholicism was still the largest single religion in the world.
In the world. Yeah, but I wonder about
the United States, maybe.
And you know what was interesting is that the readings were about, you know, if you give and you make noise, like you put coins in so everyone knows that you're giving, you've already gotten your reward. If you're fasting and you look like it, you know, you have already gotten your reward. You should dress nicely and bathe and all that stuff so that no one knows that you're fasting. And the priest said, now, contrary to that, here we have these ashes on our forehead that says, okay, you know, and he said, but what it says is to everybody else, we're the suckers that Jesus came to redeem. Well, we're the sinners. That's why we're wearing the ashes.
I gotta tell you, it's funny that you bring this up, because today I watched the news and there was a local newsman that had ashes. And what was the first thought I had? He hasn't washed his face since Wednesday.
That's exactly right. Yes.
You know, that's the first thing I thought was like, oh my God, it's been 4 days. Wash your face. But anyway.
That's odd. Yeah.
But, you know, I think we don't know enough about other people's traditions. And maybe that's because we've, you know, now tried to homogenize everything.
Well, that's to your point about, you know, let there be a nativity scene, let there be a menorah, let there be an acknowledgement of what it is that there are those of us who are celebrating, being inclusive instead of exclusionary.
And that's a wonderful thing about America. You know, I remember reading something about Christmas one time and the different traditions that we have. Well, we have a lot of American traditions, but they're really traditions that we've taken from other people. Christmas trees are German. The giving of gifts was started in England. The, you know, all these different things that we've made part of our own. And I think that that's an amazing thing in America. And I hope that we can continue to do that. The only person that I've ever known in my entire life that did not have one bigoted bone in his whole body was my dad. And he celebrated the differences, you know. He was Irish on St. Patrick's Day. You know, he used to talk with a brogue and, you know, and you know, on Bastille Day, we'd wear a tam. And
you're kidding.
No, I'm telling you. And we'd have like some French, you know, we'd have escargot or something for dinner. And you know, he reveled in the differences of different cultures and taught us about many cultures. And I hate to see that I hate to see that lost. And I think
if the Equal Rights Amendment ever does get passed, because it does need three more states,
right,
how will that change the landscape? Is it just in name only, or will it actually make some, like, is it a domino effect that once it does get ratified, then interesting too, if you look at the map of where it is and is not ratified, yeah, they're clustered.
Yeah, they are. And, but again, you know, I think there's a lesson here for the Democrats. If you look at those, if you look at the election results, you'll see that they're clustered too. And not far, not that much different from the cluster of the Equal Rights Amendment. And I think there's an important lesson there that we need to, rather than stand by our own positions, we need to start reaching out to one another. We need to understand why people feel the way they do and address these problems, I think, as the Democratic Party, for example. And I don't see that going on right now. I got to tell you that we were talking. I got involved in a thing on Facebook where we were making comments on a post that somebody from a border town had written about immigration, about building the wall, actually. Had a lot to do with building the wall and how we needed border security. Well, let me tell you something. I had a difference of opinion with a lot of the people from that were writing that you know, they wanted the wall and they wanted more border, you know, they wanted to do some what I consider radical things for border security. But I can tell you, these people are hurting. You can tell when you read the things that they're posting online, you can feel the anxiety and the pain that they're feeling, and the problems that they discuss are real problems in these towns. And for us as liberals to sit back and say, no, you don't need that, without coming up with solutions that make sense to these people, is the height of arrogance, I think. And I think it's one of the reasons that we lost the election, is because we're not taking their, we're more concerned about standing by our position than we are about looking what the situation is and seeing what we can do to intervene and help.
Well, it certainly is. I mean, that's what they say about the Rust Belt, right? That they're really the ones who elected President Trump. And that,
who were Democrats. They were all Democrats, yeah. 30 years ago.
And the flyover, yeah, right? But yeah. So the people have spoken, and now this is who's in charge. And it will be interesting to see if it galvanizes, if it polarizes, if the pendulum is going to swing again to the other, you know, to left. You know, how will we right ourselves, et cetera, et cetera. It's unfolding. You know, unfortunately, the man should stay off of Twitter if he could help it.
Stay off of Twitter.
I don't mind it that he's on Twitter, because it's his presidential radio address, if you will. But he needs to stop with some of the speculating and the knee-jerk and the baiting that he succumbs to. That's what I find so funny.
Well, it's funny that you bring that up, because somebody on CNN, some news reporter said that, Republican said that it really bothers her too, but she has a love-hate relationship with it. On the one hand, she likes the fact that this is instant access to the president of the United States, that it's, mm-hmm, not filtered, that they haven't gotten a panel together to decide to homogenize it and put out a statement, you know, something that we all want to hear, you know, like I often say in politics, you know, the typical politician is out there saying, I'm for your right to own guns as long as nobody gets hurt and you don't have, you know what I mean? They always try to play both sides against the middle. And when you come out, what happens is you get a policy that doesn't satisfy anybody, right? Because, you know, you're always trying to please everybody. So she likes it on that front, but on that hand, but on the other hand, she agrees that, you know, yeah, he's just doing crazy stuff out there, saying crazy stuff out there. Now, his latest tweet about Obama
yesterday.
We'll see what happens with that. But that's just reckless to do that without any evidence. You know,
if it is
something that we don't know. Okay, but he's the leader of the free world now. He's no longer, you know, the candidate. This is also a very hard thing to do as somebody that's run for political office a lot of times. It's not the same. Running the country is not the same as being a candidate, and it's hard to make that transition, but he certainly needs to do it.
And speaking of that, Michael, what has that journey been like for you politically? Because morally and ethically and with your family and your wife of long standing and your three children, you're this, I believe, this amazing, stellar human being. Yet you got to get down and dirty when it comes to politics. And how do you reconcile that? And I don't mean dirty as in unethical or illegal, just that there's mud that gets slung.
Right. Well, the first thing you need to do is develop a tough skin. I mean, there's not a member of my family that hasn't called me crying on the phone. You know, my daughter's called me crying on the phone from stuff she's read in the paper. My wife has gotten into a fight with a reporter because she saw me just being beat up. Been beat up, and she couldn't take it anymore. It's tougher sometimes for the people around you than it is for you. I say to my wife sometimes, you know, we're both basketball fans. Pat and I are basketball fans, and sometimes I say to her, honey, if you got a problem taking an elbow, you can't play in the NBA. You know, I mean, that's just the bottom line. It's not nice to throw your elbows. It's not legal in the game to throw your elbows, but everybody does it. And if you can't deal with it, then you need to find another sport. And that's how I feel about politics. And they do throw elbows. My favorite thing about this, my favorite example of this, is I was standing in front of a polling place one day, and I gave this little old lady a piece of literature, and she looked at it and she said, "Vote for Michael Brown. I hate that guy." And I said to her, thinking that she didn't understand it was me. Uh-huh. I said to her, "No, I'm Michael Brown." And she handed the paper back to me. And she said, "I know who you are." And she walked in. And, you know, how do you answer that? You go, "Okay, have a nice day." I mean, you stand there and argue with her.
But at least that was refreshingly honest instead of the innuendos and the false accusations and the things that go on that seem, because that's why I've never run. I would love to be an elected official, but I don't have that thick skin that you're talking about. And, you know, I've been married more than once. And so I had, do you know who David Horowitz is? Not the, the guy, but he's the former communist who now is a Republican. Maybe now he's declined to state. He called me about 15 years ago and asked if I would run for office in the state of California. And I said to him, I asked him three times, and he goes, "Do you not speak English?" And I said, "Michael, you know that I've been married more than once." And he said, "What does that have to do with anything?" And I was like, "Well, because at that time, most of our politicians, it was the one and only, like you, you know." But fortunately,
I've been married twice.
Have you?
See, you don't even know. Yes, to a communist. No, not to a communist. No, I was. I was married very young in life. No children. No. You know, but I was married for 5 years and 6 years.
Because here we have Donald Trump with his three marriages, so apparently now it's not an issue. But back then, and my kids were young too, and I said, I can't put my family through that, even though my husband at the time was totally and completely supportive of it. It was just like, I don't think I have the thick skin, and I didn't want them to now it wouldn't matter because they're adults and, you know, self-supporting and everything else. I mean, it's still their mom, but still, you know, it's
well,
not the same.
Let me be the first to volunteer for the Maria Sanchez for Congress campaign. I would fly out to California in a heartbeat and help you.
In but, this blue state of ours.
Because you need people that care, you know. And yeah, I'll tell you what I say to everybody that says that to me in Washington. They go, oh, I can't run for public office. I got a pass. Marion Barry, okay, we love the guy. I love the guy. But he had a past, and he kept on running, and he kept on getting elected. And that's the thing about politics. They were so afraid when they put the country together, when they established the Constitution and the other form, you know, when they set up the government, they were so afraid that people would trump up charges – no pun intended, would trump up charges to keep you from being elected, that really it's only up to the voters whether you get elected or not. So there are plenty of states in which if you're convicted of a felony, you cannot vote in an election, but you can hold public office. You
that
can be
true,
elected
huh?
governor, but you can't vote for yourself.
Right.
You know, because they leave it up to the voters. That's why, for example, a member of Congress cannot be stopped by a police officer while Congress is in session. Can't be stopped and held. Because in the early days of politics, if the congressman from South Carolina went home and there was a vote and we knew he wasn't going to vote our way, as he was coming through Virginia back to Washington, the governor might have him, you know, picked up and held for a couple of days so he couldn't vote. You can have Charles Manson, if he was released, could probably run for office.
Because he's a felon.
Felons can run. I'm telling you, felons can, yes, convicted. You can be a convicted felon and hold public office. Malcolm X probably could have gotten elected to something.
Saying that's why you said you might not be able to vote for yourself, but you can run?
Yes.
Because convicted felons can't vote, correct?
They can't vote, right.
Right.
Run. Some states they can vote if they've served their time and gone through certain things, But yes, you can run. And you know what? Anybody out there that's listening to the show and has an interest in running, run. It's a great experience. And you know, we need good people. We need good people that care.
I agree with you. And I do encourage that too, that activism, you know, just to get involved in whatever it is. I'm working with the cancer support community. That's one of my internships, and I'm now doing community liaison work with them to get the word out and get stories published and all of that kind of stuff, because you can't just participate. You have to be active too. And I'm always passionate about the causes that I align myself with. So it comes organically and authentically. But I think that's more true with our communities and our civics than with anything else in life.
Well, you know, and that's the other thing that needs to be pointed out. I would challenge you to come up with an American president of the last 50 years that's had an impact on the world, the same impact that Martin Luther King, for example, had. You don't need to be a politician to change the world. You can change it. As an activist, you can change it by getting involved. I mean, politics is just one way to do it. But look at this guy. He changed the world, really. He changed America, and he changed a lot of other places around the world. And he was assassinated at 39 years old. He wasn't even very old when he was doing it. So there's plenty of ways to be involved in your community. And we see people all the time that are just doing wonderful things, don't we, in our communities. They're amazing. And sometimes they don't get the recognition that they deserve. We ought to, you know, we all talk about how much we appreciate them, but we should probably recognize them more. So,
And you're a case in point. And in your introduction, you always talk about a grassroots organization.
Yeah.
And what is it that that means to you?
It means people getting together and starting a movement without a framework, people who have just decided that they're going to, that they care about making a change and they're going to push to make a change. You know, is I think it was Jane Goodall that said, was it, no, who was the great anthropologist, woman, Margaret Mead, who said that, you know, a handful of concerted, dedicated people can change the world. In fact, it's the only group that ever really has changed the world, is that, you know, the movement is organic, you know, and that's why we call it grassroots rather than prescribed as part of a strategy. So when drug companies get together and they lobby on Capitol Hill, or the agricultural people come in and they, you know, and farmers come up there to lobby, that's not grassroots. That's people that are pursuing their own self-interest, and it's very calculated. I see grassroots as something that grows out of a need in a community to do something, when people show up. In our movement, for example, one of the examples that's used many times is the fact that for many years, people in Congress tried to get a holiday passed to celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday. And there was no legislation introduced to do that until Stevie Wonder wrote a song about King and his birthday. Happy birthday, I think it's called, really. Happy birthday to you. But he performed it on the west lawn of the Capitol, and 50,000 people showed up. And when they showed up, the next day there was legislation put in. That's
You're
what
kidding.
I call no. And it ultimately passed, as we know, because it is a national holiday, except in
right.
Arizona. But, you know, that's what I mean by grassroots. People just stand up and they form around a need, and they bring that need forth. And I think we'll see more and more of it now that we have Twitter and Facebook and all those things where people communicate instantly with
mm-hmm.
each other.
Well, and MoveOn.org and the GoFundMe things and
right.
that sort of thing, that which is kind of fascinating if you think about it, that we actually are getting some empowerment. Well, look at Snapchat.
Yes, Snapchat. Those kids,
yeah.
you know, what, they're
more billionaires.
$2 billion? Yeah.
And they're
yeah,
in Venice,
amazing.
California. And they're saying, because Venice is right here in Southern California, part of Los Angeles. And there people are complaining because now it's going to make the real estate more unaffordable, because now there's all more people that have more money that can pay, you know, whatever. And it's like, yeah, but it's trickle down. You know,
right.
that means more property taxes. It means more infrastructure. It means all of that stuff that goes with it. Yes, and it means more unaffordability. I understand that.
Well,
supply
I
and
mean,
demand.
I mean, yeah, it's just amazing how some of these things have taken off, and the money that's involved in the it's crazy. I just wish one of those Google kids was one of my kids so they could support me in my old age. But but that's
it could
all right.
Be us though, Michael. We could be the innovators.
Yeah,
because you know how many
yeah.
folks there are that have done things. I think. Personally, I mean, Zuckerberg seems to be one of the exceptions, but when too much fame and fortune come to somebody when they're young, they don't have a lot of methods to process it, and they don't really have a support system that they can trust, and all of those things that go wrong with people who have that happen to them. I would much rather have success at this stage of my life, having worked hard, know what it means to sacrifice, know what it means to fail, know what it means to be kicked to the curb, know what it means to have to eat humble pie, all of that stuff. I think that would make us better stewards of that power and money than these kids.
Okay, so if you're out there, Google guys, send a half a billion dollars to Maria and a half a billion dollars to me, and then we'll, yeah. No, I agree with you. And, you know, we've seen that, right, with these sports guys that make a fortune and then lose it, or certainly we saw it with musicians, rock and rollers, you know, people that made hundreds of millions of dollars and lost it all because they didn't know how to manage it or had it stolen from them because they didn't know how to manage it.
You know, alleged people that they can trust. But, you know, the NFL, I think they've got it's up to a couple of weeks of training to help these young men manage their money and their finances and who to trust and what to do and how to invest and et cetera, et cetera. And the NBA, I think, has the same kind of program, too.
Well, it's smart of them to do that. And it's funny that I used to own basically a political ad agency, direct mail and printing and other stuff like that. And I used to do the planner for the NFL. They probably don't use planners anymore, but I used to do the planner for the NFL that they gave to all NFL players every year. And they always had stuff at the top that said things. Some of them were funny. I can't remember them exactly. I'll have to get a copy. I've got samples. I have to get a copy and read a few on a future show. But they said things like, don't forget you're a millionaire. Don't go into a bar and get into a brawl. That kind of thing. You know, that's not what millionaires do. You know, and you look at some of these kids, they really come, you know, imagine not making anything, not making any money at all, maybe coming from the worst part of town and getting into the NBA, and all of a sudden you're worth hundreds of millions of dollars. It's just incredible. So you can see, or being a rock and roller, having a garage band one day, and the next day you're doing world tours and making millions and millions of dollars. Well, you know, it seems like we're about to go through a whole show again, and I didn't get to talk about President Obama. This is, I think, Maria is very, very clever and gets me talking.
You have a couple minutes left to do
that. All right. Let's talk then quickly about these town halls. What happened in Northern California? Didn't a brawl break out at some protest in Northern California, I read? Yeah,
and we just had one locally yesterday, and hundreds couldn't get in, and they were protesting outside. But those that did get in, apparently it was respectful, although spirited. So people weren't being drowned out and shouted out. So I don't know what that's about. But yes, in Northern California, it got contentious. And I don't know about you, Michael. I don't care what the channel is, even if it's Fox or CNN, one of the more mainstream cable. As soon as people start talking over one another, I turn the channel. I have zero tolerance for that. Shut up.
Well, let everybody out there understand this. It's not about Donald Trump. It's not about Hillary Clinton. It's about the people that stood behind these people. The country is split down the middle. And no matter what the president does, and no matter what we do to try to counter that, until we come together, nothing's going to change. President Trump is about to issue the travel ban again tomorrow, from what I understand. And, you know, it's not a matter of the travel ban. It's not a matter of him doing that, guys. It's a matter of us getting together and putting pressure on government to do what we want them to do. And as long as 50% of the people support the travel ban and 50% of the people are against the travel ban, nothing's going to happen. It's not going to change because we really got to get a majority of people working in the same direction somehow. And to do that, we need to reach across the aisle. It's like the thing that I said earlier about the discussion on Facebook about the wall. I don't think the wall is right. But you know what? I also realized in that discussion that something needs to be done for these people. Something needs to be done. And just like you can't just get rid of Obamacare, you just can't get rid of border security or immigration policy. We need to find solutions. And the only way we can find solutions is to come together.
And if that isn't the greatest lesson that we could all learn, then this will have been worth it, because that suits everybody's needs. Again, that's a win-win-win, which is how I always like to operate. And that's true of any facet of our lives, no matter who you are. So if we can come together and have a consensus and agree to disagree and or compromise and or make some concessions, then the world's going to be a better place, not just America, but the world.
So remember that, America, that we'll leave you with that. And also vote Maria Sanchez 2018. And we'll see you next week.
Yes,
we're
going to
play
a
song for all the people in the District of Columbia now.
Aww.
I wish I knew how it would feel to be free. Thank Aww. You. See you next week.
Okay, Michael. Take care.
Give the people their right to vote.